Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
August Fortyroff. Welcome back to Capital Irish. You have tuned in to 106.1 FM on Access Radio, and we come to you every Sunday morning from Wellington with all the news about what's happening in Ireland and Irish things that are happening in Wellington, New Zealand. And if you know anybody who'd like to listen to our show, it's on podcast. And you can get into our show by www.accessradio.org.nz. But most of our presenters have a different take on the programme every week. Some people interview people, other people have like Jim Friel is a great historian, and he gives us a lovely history sort of information every week. And other people love music. So, yeah. And I'm delighted to welcome Marion Greenless back. She's been on holiday in Ireland for a couple of months. And she said that she has a lovely tan now, which you wouldn't get if you went to Rarotonga, which I did. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, lovely to have you all listening. And first, I'd like to thank our sponsors, of course, because they back us up all the time. Susie and Peter McGuinness, the Wellington Irish Trust and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. And I'll just tell you about Hutt Valley Irish Society. They have a potluck dinner on the last Sunday of every month at 5:30. So if you come along to that, you'll meet other great people, and the kids are running around there, and sometimes they sing. They sang last week or a couple of weeks ago for everybody, and that was a joy. But today I've got a special guest, and I would like to welcome Éilis Ní Cheasaidir. Éilis Cassidy from County Derry in Ireland. Welcome, Éilis.
Thank you very much, Alice. It's great to be here.
And Éilis is a bit of a star. And she's a star in the GAA. She was a star in Ireland. And I was doing a bit of research. Well, I've met Éilis because she's a fluent Irish speaker. Just give us a wee bit about your background first for the listeners who would be very interested in the kind of family you come from, Éilis.
Thank you. I was born and I grew up in a place called Slachneil, which is just the foot of the Carntochar Mountain in rural South Derry. I guess the closest town to me would be Mahara, which would be kind of, as a crow would fly, midway between Belfast and Derry and the two major cities in the north.
Okay. Yeah.
So I grew up with the Irish language, and we attended one of the first rural Gael schools all across the six counties. So I was very fortunate in that regard, but also then influenced then by the sport and the music and all aspects of Irish culture.
Yes.
So I guess that has come with me everywhere I go since.
Because it's such a surprise for people probably to hear that in the middle of County Derry, you attended a Gael school, which is just fantastic. How lucky was that?
Massively fortunate. And I guess it only was when we grew older that we could really appreciate the decision and the big risk that it was to take for our parents.
Yes.
It was first founded in 1992. And in its formative years, there were only very few students per class. And it was the reliance on the parents and other sponsors that were paying the fees of the teachers. So it wasn't a really lucrative job to be taking up with no long-term guarantee for any hopeful teachers. So it was just kind of coming in, seeing what was happening, doing what they could. And then eventually we were recognised and sponsored then by the government.
Is that right? Mm. Oh, the UK government.
Yes.
That's amazing. And yet the Irish language was not accepted in Stormont. Tell me a bit about that, because I know that you're politically minded in that area.
Yes, I guess it was a long battle, and all the while we were just kind of working away like little ants and doing what we could do. So again, we kind of gathered momentum that we talk about the Moore Hulage and the parades that we do, and a number of years has been happening and taking place in Belfast, marching all the way to Larne Cathra or the City Hall.
Right.
And I guess this year it was great to see that there were over 6,000 people that were involved, and that was ranging right from young babies all the way through to adults, because the Irish language does have a big community, and especially now with so many schools spotted across Ulster. You have these wee pockets of gaels, and that are really staunch and really there for the sake of the Irish language. So it's great to have the support now of a much wider population. And I guess the government now has to pay heed to that as well, and with the recognition of the Irish language.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because I know that when I was working in Belfast from 69 to 72 in training as a nurse, there were little pockets in the Falls Road.
Absolutely.
Where you had Irish speakers.
Yeah, that would have been considered the Gaeltacht quarter of Belfast. But now, even consider where I was growing up or where I was brought up, there's now multiple feeder schools from the Gaelscoileanna into the Gaelcholiste, which is a secondary.
Oh, so they've got a Gaelcholiste as well.
Yeah, so there's a secondary
And where is that
option.
In
it? It's in Dungiven, in the beautiful backdrop of the mountain there. So we have the castle, which would have been known, Dungiven Castle would have been well known for dances over the years.
Yeah.
So they now have a huge big conversion there as well, with more of the specific labs, science rooms, like kind of specialist classrooms there as well. And they are tripling in size with every year too. So it is very popular.
And that's funded as well by the state.
Yeah, totally funded.
Fantastic. And well, that's incredible progress in Northern Ireland. And you would have been, your mother and father obviously spoke Irish as well, because otherwise how would it have kept?
But I guess my dad always had an interest in Irish, and he was a lifelong learner. He would have been attending Irish language classes at night time after
is
his work.
Is that right? Yeah.
So it was kind of from that then that he decided, he's like, okay, the research is here for immersion education. A lot of the Irish stuff then was based on the situation in Quebec and Canada, where they were doing total French immersion. So the benefits were well listed and well documented from the cognitive side of things.
Yeah. And was your father a teacher?
He wasn't a teacher, no. He and his brother had his own business, but not related to the Irish language at all. But it was just like an interest that he had outside of that. And he did go on then to do his diploma in Irish language part-time after
Marvelous.
A day's work.
What a great man.
Multiple sports teams as well too. So, and there were seven children of us at home. So
That's
he didn't have
right.
much spare time to be stretched out reading a book or taking any leisure time.
Coming from a family of seven, of course, which is almost unheard of now. How old is the youngest in your family now?
The youngest is currently 22.
Yeah. So you see, it's a modern family.
Yeah.
And your mum and dad. And I know your dad sadly passed away.
Yeah.
Far too young. And that your mum carries on all the traditions.
Yeah. Absolutely. She's very encouraging of us. And since daddy passed away, a number of us have gone to travel overseas or spend time away from home too, but we're all still very proud of who we are and the way we're brought
Fantastic.
Up.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I suppose one of the reasons I was so keen to get you on to talk as well is you have been selected here in New Zealand to represent New Zealand with the GAA in Australia. So you're some woman, and you've played camogie at the Irish in Ireland in Croke Park.
Yes, in Croke Park.
With the All Ireland?
Yes, you're very.
I'm sitting with somebody very important today.
Oh, you're very kind to use the word selected for the football, I guess. It was some time ago that the GAA club here in Wellington had expressed an interest, or for those who are interested, to get in touch then with the willingness to travel to Melbourne for the state games.
Yes.
And there was a number of people that perhaps were considering moving home to Ireland at that stage, or knew that they would be making a trip home when possible since COVID. And I guess I was a very late entry. And when I arrived here, I thought to myself that I had retired from the sport. I'd played at a very high level.
Wow, yes.
And it was just like there was no break for me in Ireland, because if you're successful, your season continues. And at that time, the club scene was running right through into March time with a new season league starting in April. So there's very little downtime. And if you're training at that high level, it is commitment,
exhausting.
Four or five sessions a week across gym, pitch session and challenge matches.
Yeah.
So when I left Ireland, I told myself that I had retired.
Time off.
When I came here then, the first thing I was doing was contacting the GAA club. And it's been a fantastic way to meet other people and to make connections. But over the course of time then, I've reluctantly, most for the early parts, started to dabble in a wee bit of ladies football. And
Dabble. I think that you're one of the star players from what I read.
Oh, no, I'm not too sure with that, but we'll have
there've
to
been,
see.
One of the articles I couldn't quite get into, it was an Australian article. But before we go any further, I'd love to play a song for you. And it is, I Wish I Was Back Home in Derry. Now, I know this is because it's you're from Derry, but also Christy Moore is going to sing it, and you went to see him when you were at home, you were just saying.
Yes, I did. I was very lucky to catch one of his gigs. He played at the Sleeve Russell in County Cavan, so yeah. I went along to that, and as Christy often does, he delivers a brilliant show.
Yeah.
Very entertaining, and it was just special. Probably one of his last touring gigs, I would think.
Oh,
sadly.
That's sad.
I know it is sad, yeah. But he's a fantastic artist, and I have a great appreciation for his work
absolutely.
And all that he includes in his songs.
He does. Well, this is a beautiful one. I wish I was back home in Derry.
We sailed out to sea, out from the sweet town of Derry. For Australia bound, if we didn't all drown, the marks of our feathers we carried. In the rusty iron chains, we cried for our wains, a good woman we left in sorrow. As the mainsails unfurled, a curse as we heard on the English and thoughts of tomorrow. At the mouth of the foil, bid farewell to the soil, as down below decks we were lying. O'Doherty screamed, walking out of a dream, by a vision of bold Robert Day. The sun burned cruel as we dished out the gruel, Dan O'Connor was down with a fever. 60 rebels today, bound for Botany Bay, how many will reach their receiver? Them to hell as our bow fought to swell, our ship danced like a moth in the firelight. White horses rode high as the devil passed by, taking souls to Hades by twilight. 5 weeks out to sea, we were now 43, we buried our comrades each morning. In our own slime, we were lost in the time, endless night without dawn. Back home in Derry. Oh, I wish I was back home in Derry. Van Diemen's Land is a hell for a man to end out his whole life in slavery, where the climate is raw and a gun makes the law, neither wind nor rain care for bravery. 20 years have gone by, I've ended my bond, but comrades go swap behind me. A rebel I came, I'm still the same, on the cold winds of the night you will find me.
Thank you, Christy Moore's beautiful song. That was lovely. Hope you all enjoyed it. You have tuned in again to 106.1 FM on Capital Irish, and I'm Alice Paul, and I'm chatting here today with Éilis Ní Cassidy. Say it properly for me, Éilis.
Éilis Ní Cassidy.
Ní Cassidy. See, I'm having a little Irish language here. In fact, there is a group of people here in Wellington, Éilis is a member of that group, who speak the Irish language once every month. Is it once a month?
Yeah, we try to make it once a month or once every second month where possible.
Yeah. And it can be a little bit intimidating if you've still got the school Irish like me and are a bit scared to speak it. But well worth battling on, as you were saying, like your dad, kept learning year after year and then became a fluent speaker.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess it's, everyone's made feel very welcome, and it's just very casual, yeah. Very laid back. And
it's
I'll
lovely.
Never forget my
yeah.
first night. I was given this address and I went along, and I just knew, I had full confidence in my heart that I would open that door and someone would respond in Irish
yeah.
to me, an absolute stranger's house. So I just opened the door. And I said, Giagich, and then and I went, and they're like, oh, Kajimra Tatu, Falsius,
yeah.
But I have to say, I'm one of the very few Irish speakers that has the Donegal dialect.
That's right.
The Gaelic,
you have. It's beautiful. I love listening to the Donegal dialect yeah. because, of course, being from Ulster,
yes.
that's what we would have been more used to.
Absolutely.
And it's lovely, and it reminds me of Alton and all the groups as well,
yeah.
the songs, yeah.
Yeah, so I put us on
so
the map for that.
Beautiful, yeah. But anyhow, I said Eilish is a great Gaelic football player, a camogie player. She has other skills in the sports arena, I think, and you've touched on a few of them. But you and your family, the seven children and your mum,
yeah.
were featured on a programme in Ireland called The Gansey. And this particular programme has an in-depth look at sports in Ireland, GAA, and how it affects communities and what good it does to communities as well. So tell me a bit about that, because I have to admit I did try and find it to replay it, but I didn't know when you're on, so I wasn't able to do that, but I'd love to try.
Absolutely, you might find it now on YouTube. But I guess TG Cahir were trying to put a bit of a spotlight then on a number of different clubs around the country,
yeah.
Particular emphasis on the Irish language and the connection with the club through that. So looking back now, like, we're very fortunate to have that footage, because there's a lot of clips with Daddy and Mummy and us all in it.
Really?
And we're all like playing out in the front garden. So as we were growing up, we always had enough to make two teams, and or the neighbours joined in and the relations came.
My goodness.
So there would always be a mass brawl in the form of a hurling match or a camogie match in the front garden. So
that is amazing.
It's really special to have those all this time later. But
so they came and they did a documentary on your family, particularly because you're a great sports family and you were Gaelic speakers in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, and yeah. really the club itself, Robert Emmett Slachneil, like, wouldn't have been very well known at all. It was very rural, very small, until it started to get its first flavour of success.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, like, we were talked all over Ireland. Like, we do have the camogie, the football and the hurling, and all three adult codes became successful around the one time.
Wow.
So we were the champions of Ulster.
My goodness.
For 3 years in a row in all different codes.
Yeah.
So that was very special and very unheard of as well.
Mm.
And what we didn't know at that time is that the Camogues would go on to win the All-Ireland Senior Club title the following March too, and Daddy had passed away in October.
Oh.
So now we look back, and it actually breaks my heart to watch it, but I know how special it really is.
And when you say the Camogues, you went to the All-Ireland final, who did you play with?
For my club. It was for my former club.
Okay.
But previous to that, I had played also for Derry.
Yeah.
And we won the All-Ireland Intermediate in 2012.
Right. My goodness.
So that was my first time to play in Croke Park, actually.
Really? Yeah. How old were you then?
I would have been, what, I was born in 92. You've been 20.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. What an honour to play in Croke Park.
Yeah, and again,
that's something every kid grows up with thinking, yeah. Oh, I'd love to play in Croke Park.
Yeah.
But so.
And looking back now, I did feel so young at the time. And
yes.
Of course, it was nowhere near to the stadium capacity as it would be in All Ireland Hurling or football final, you know,
course.
In September.
Yeah.
But it was still huge. It was still an honour to play there.
Huge. Did they play the national anthem
they
before?
They absolutely did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember, like, I played half back on that day. An absolute stroke of luck. I scored a goal as well.
Wow.
From like the midfield line. I think it was just like the sun was in the goalkeeper's eyes and it just bounced through. And I thought, my goodness,
but
if I had been trying to do that, I couldn't have done it. But
imagine
I was a good memory.
Imagine having memories. That on your CV, I scored a goal.
Yeah.
So, Eilish, you've come to New Zealand and you're teaching in Cheriton Park in the school.
Amesbury.
And before you came, you were teaching a Gael school
yeah.
in Ireland. So you've made such a huge change. So I'd just like to know a bit about what took you to New Zealand and what's that
yeah.
like for you now? You know, how you...
Yeah, I always had this idea in my head that I would travel after university, for example. And it was always in the back of my mind that Mummy and Daddy had travelled and they had lived in Australia, and they talked about the great friends that they had and the Irish people that they met And even on our own family holidays, I recount Daddy stopping off to parents of such and such friend, or he knew a guy that he worked with from Mayo, he would have stopped off
yes.
at their parents or at his home place and went to speak to them, to meet them in
that
person.
That he met in Australia.
Yeah, and that was up to 16, 17, 18, 20 years after he'd come
My
home from
goodness.
Australia.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, Daddy obviously thought a lot about these people.
Yeah.
He trusted them, he loved
they
them.
They were good people.
Yeah. Mm. And I always had this idea too, that I'd go and travel and see the world as well, but then with commitments and sport and Daddy's sickness, I guess I didn't want to be away from home.
Yeah.
For extended periods of time. So as a teacher, when I could, I would have travelled at Christmas or Easter. Summer was always dedicated then to the sports.
Yes.
And then I thought, right, if I don't go and live overseas anytime soon and I reach the age of 30, I'll never do it after that.
Yeah.
So in that time, kind of my mind had matured towards New Zealand. I am an outdoors person. I love to hike
yes.
and tramp and head into
and ski.
The backcountry, the ski as well. And I just thought, okay, New Zealand looks absolutely stunning, out of this world, beautiful. So I decided I would come here instead. And I had a friend who had visited before I made the decision to come. And she had recommended two places to me. She said that either Nelson or Wellington would be most suited for you. So I came along. I had no plan when I arrived here in the beginning.
Well,
and I then booked myself onto a tour of the South Island and with the G Adventures group. And I did 16 days around the South Island and came back to Wellington. And I said, right, what's next? I said, one thing's for sure, I have to get myself a bank account, an IRD number,
yeah.
and somewhere to stay. So I've been in Wellington since.
And how long ago was that, Hilish?
I arrived here in August of 2019. So just 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, COVID had happened. So
yes.
any holidays that I was forced to take, I was in Wellington, or sorry, in New Zealand, I should say, more often than not on the South Island.
Wow.
And so I've had an absolute blessing to experience every corner of New Zealand.
Wow, you've done better
season.
Than most.
I kind of have fallen in love with it so much so that I'm so much more content here. And I've just returned recently from a trip to Ireland, and I remarked at how quick it was for my homesickness to disappear.
Amazing.
So I
That's
feel settled
great.
Here, yeah.
Yeah, you'd be so good for a lot of people who are moving here to hear yeah. those stories
yeah.
and to know how positive you are.
Yeah.
Because I know some people suffer from really bad homesickness, and it's lovely to see the other side of the coin.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe I just keep myself too busy at times to think about it, to stop and think. But
and
getting involved with the school and the culture and the language too has been really important in the Te Reo Māori as well. So it's all been a massive learning curve for me too.
Yeah. And you're probably starting to get a bit fluent in Te Reo as well.
Just a wee bit. There's phrases and words now that I know. But through the school too, we know a lot of Waiata and Karakia and the mihi mihi or the pepiha and stuff like that too.
Mm. You'll be able to do your pepiha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's just great. Well, usually on the programme, we do a little bit of news about what Irish things are happening in Wellington. Of course, we've got a new ambassador, but we farewelled Peter Ryan a few weeks ago, and everybody got to know Peter very well. So we really will warmly welcome our new ambassador, when we really look forward to meeting her as well, and Ambassador Connolly. So, and I know you've done some work at the Irish Embassy as well with your Irish language reading. A beautiful poem one evening, I think I saw there. But I was looking for news about Ireland over the last few days. And the big news about the Ukrainian refugees, there are 47,962 refugees in Ireland now. So that's at the moment, there's an average of 1,000 refugees arriving in Ireland every week, according to the statistics. And so that's an increase of seemingly 3,300 in the last few weeks. But we have to keep in mind that 12 million people have fled their homes since the Russian invasion. And so that's huge. And 5 million of them have left for neighbouring countries, and 7 million people are thought to be displaced in the Ukraine itself. So that's a really sad, but the saddest part, I suppose, for Ireland is they were running out of beds recently, running out of accommodation. And not because people are not kind and generous in offering, but earlier this month, the Red Cross said that thousands of people who pledged to house the refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine are still waiting for Garda vetting. You see, you can't take somebody into your home unless you've been vetted by the Gardaí. And you can't get that done in a hurry because there were so many thousands waiting to have that done. So we know that everybody's full of good intention and good intentions, but then there's the double whammy of the direct provision as well and the emergency accommodation for all that. So did you hear anything, or was that sort of in the news when you were at home, Eilish? Did you?
It was very much the forefront, and I went on a trip just to Donegal as well when I was in Ireland just this summer, and I did see for myself firsthand that many of the accommodation options and Airbnb bookings and stuff like that were being used up by the refugees. So I was like obviously delighted to know that people were being generous and these were being offered to the refugees, but also I think it took them to the very western shores of Donegal. Like there's not much economic happening in that side of the world.
No.
And in that area of the county in particular too. So it can be quite daunting, I'm sure, for them as well to know what prospects or what lies ahead for them.
Absolutely. But did you not at the same by the same token find that the economy is going really well?
I think it was funny in my head, having been working with the dollar recently and then translating it across into the sterling and euros, everything seemed so much cheaper. But everyone was very quick to remind me that with the cost, like inflation is obviously costing a lot, and the prices have rose a whole lot recently. And they're telling me that everything is now so much more expensive than before.
Than what it was,
But I guess like definitely much improved from COVID times, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. And now with the new Prime Minister of Britain, Liz Truss, coming in, I'd advise any of you to read a fantastic article by Fintan O'Toole. If you can just Google Fintan O'Toole. And Liz Truss, the headline says, will make Johnson seem like a political genius and May a mistress of empathy and Cameron a beacon of sincerity. And he goes on to say, finally, Ireland is now less mad than Britain. It is less prone to head staggers of a reactionary nationalism. Who could imagine the Irish government doing something so pointlessly cruel as flying asylum seekers back to Rwanda, like the British did? So for the old-fashioned British patriot and the old-fashioned English habit of looking down on Ireland as a strange and backward place, these comparisons ought to be alarming. Whatever about falling behind the Germans, being surpassed by the blighted Irish ought to be rather shaming. That's very funny. It's a funny article. It's real tongue-in-cheek, but it's good fun to read. You know what? We've come to the end of the programme. Marion is giving us the signal that we've talked enough. And it's just been lovely to have you here, Eilish. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, I just hope
you'll come on again, maybe do one of the programmes. It would be fantastic. And thanks, everybody, for listening. It's always great pleasure to have your company. I'm Alice Paul, and I'll be back in another month or so. And slán agus beannacht.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.